Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Grant.
Hello.
Paul Grant.
Yes, that's right.
Grant Paul, Grant.
I've been called a lot of things, so either of those work.
Kind of cool when you got a name that's could be two first names.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Easier to remember. Hey, this week we're continuing our look at funding integration or financial integration of your estate plan.
Yeah, very critical part. As a matter of fact, in estate plans that we actually do not create. So in other words, somebody comes to our office and says, we need help. What specifically if someone has passed away, if a family comes into our office, this is the one thing that creates the most dynamic mess that there is, which is that the assets are in multiple people's names. Some are in a trust, some are in a personal name, some are in joint name. We have spouses who died 10 years ago with names on it, on an asset, specifically like a home. And so this component of making sure that every asset that you own blends with your estate plan is the most critical issue beyond just getting the plan itself. Hmm. So step one is you got to be motivated to get a plan. You need an estate plan. I don't care if you have $5,000 or $50 million, you need an estate plan. You need a document for when you pass away. You need financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, and end-of-life document. Those are the four major documents that every person needs, regardless of their net worth. But then the second step in estate planning is do your assets integrate with the plan itself? And story after story, I could tell of the mess it creates and that it lengthens the time before people can actually receive their inheritance. It increases costs. Look, I don't mind being paid, but if you don't want to pay an attorney, then do it right at the beginning. So critical portion is financial integration. That's what we're talking about.
So this is this holds true with either a will approach or a living trust approach.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have a story that is actually on our desk at this moment, which is an individual passed away. They had a trust, but in this story, it would have not mattered if they had a will or a trust because his daughter needed a special needs trust. Okay, so daughter needed financial protection through a very stringent trust. So we could have put that into a will. The attorney who created the plan put that into a trust, so it wouldn't have mattered. But the IRA, the beneficiary, was listing her name personally. So now she needs asset protection so that the state doesn't take everything that is given to her, but we missed a key component. Mm-hmm. We missed that the IRA beneficiary was supposed to go to the trust itself. So it would have been better to be left to the estate or specifically to the trust created for this person. But the attorney who assisted the family did the documents, but didn't do a full review of all the assets and didn't do a full review specifically of the beneficiary designations. So now we're into a mess. It's going to cost more money to disclaim. The money is going to people that don't need it versus the person who actually needs to utilize it. So it's a very unfortunate scenario. But again, that is irrelevant of a will or a trust. We miss the asset.
What's the difference then between when you say a beneficiary designation, if it's in a person's name versus their trust's name? I mean, what's the difference there?
Yeah.
I think it would be the same thing.
Well,
it's the Jenny trust or it's Jenny.
So the difference is that with any beneficiary designation, whether it's a bank account, an IRA, as a matter of fact, even in Washington state, you can create a deed now that's called a beneficiary deed. So a beneficiary can receive a deed, a real property. That was effective about 2.5 years ago, but very few people actually know of that tool and are utilizing it. So the main difference is that if the money comes to Paul Grant specifically, okay, so I'm named as a beneficiary, then that goes into my personal account under my Social Security number. I have full and absolute control. But that also means that if something goes wrong in my life, if I'm in a car accident, if I'm in a divorce, if I have to go through a bankruptcy, if life falls apart and I become the person who needs financial protection for one reason or another, because I have taken the asset in my name, then that asset is going to be fully utilized to solve all of those different issues. And versus if it was directed towards the trust, a mechanism, a tool that can actually stand over time, it stays alive after somebody passes away. Now, when it goes into that container, I could still have access to it if I'm healthy, if I'm good with finances. So it doesn't have to be strings from the grave. But what it does is that it creates a protective mechanism when it is administrated properly. So notice that there's a qualification. It has to be administered properly. The document just doesn't do its trick just because it's there. It needs to be administered properly. But now, in all of those different scenarios, when a trust is properly created, as the beneficiary, if it goes to my trust, I have an advantage. Number one, I actually do have a tax advantage. It is common belief that a trust is taxed at a higher rate. When it is done properly, that is not accurate. So it can be a tax-advantaged mechanism for a beneficiary. Number two is that when it comes to a trust instead of just my name, then there are inherent protections that can withstand the test of time. But it all hinges upon, number one, whether the assets, number one, the proper planning, because we always have to go back to that. And then number two, whether the assets have been properly integrated into that plan. So if they are not integrated properly, then we have the story that I just told, which is one of the assets is missing the purpose of the planning. It was overlooked. And so therefore, the legacy that this person really wanted to leave, which is, I want to make sure my daughter is protected, it failed. It was not fully accomplished. Now, the saddest part about that is that the family utilized an attorney and the attorney missed it. And so here again is something that I talk about quite regularly on my show, which is you need to find the right attorney. Not just a general practitioner. Estate planning is far more complicated than what people believe. And so if you don't have an attorney who has done this repeatedly, then unfortunately, the person you should be trusting, that attorney, might miss something. And therefore, it might produce the wrong result. Always use an attorney who has great experience in estate planning when you're doing this. And so finding the right attorney who can make sure that the proper planning is done, who will also ensure that every asset is properly integrated into the plan. That's what we need.
Question, so let's say it came to your own name, like you're saying, and it was vulnerable. Can you then just turn around and go, well, oh, they forgot that. Let's just stick it back in the trust.
Yeah, no.
So what happens in that scenario?
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't do that because
really?
The asset, when someone passes away, that is done. When it's under the person's name, then that is the result that we get at the point of passing. And so, no, unfortunately, we can't just say, well, they meant to do this because they just did this change and we just forgot about it. But the contract, remember, a beneficiary designation, and that this is why looking at every asset when you do estate planning is so crucial. not just how it's titled. In other words, is it titled in the name of Paul Grant, or is it titled in the name of Paul Grant's trust? That's title, okay? Not only that, but what are the beneficiary designations? Because a beneficiary designation is a contract with the institution that you have the account with. So the institution who needs to protect themselves and follow the contract exactly as it is written can't just simply say, oh, well, okay, Paul meant to do this, so we'll just do what he meant. No, they have to look at the very specific contract and say that we must give it to the beneficiary. That is our contractual duty, and we cannot go away from it because the institution doesn't want to start a lawsuit. They're not going to have the flexibility to do what should have been done versus what is done. So what are other options? Well, for this particular client, we're going to have to disclaim. It means that the beneficiary who was supposed to receive the funds, it's either A, we disqualify them from all social benefits, which would greatly unhinge their life, or B, we have to raise a hand and say we refuse to take it. So what it means is that it's as if they died the moment before the account holder. And then there's a whole legal process that you have to go through to determine who actually gets that money if it's disclaimed. So that's called a disclaimer. I refuse to take it. So you don't have to take money. You can
Who would do that?
Well, many people actually. Really? There could be many reasons why someone would not want to receive something. What if I already had sufficient assets that it was going to cause an additional tax burden because the person didn't really plan in consideration of where my life was at? They only planned the simple way or a basic way or just as everyone else did it instead of actually understanding who the beneficiaries were and designing things for their greatest benefit. How about the story that I'm telling, which is if the person receives it, they lose state benefits that they rely upon and bring stability to their life. And the list could go on to why someone would actually raise a hand and say, I actually don't want the finances. It actually causes deeper problems than what it's worth to me. And so now, for most people, very much like you, they're scratching their head going, I don't care how I get the money. It's fine. You can give it to me. But what I'm saying is that there is a better way to do planning. And unless you actually sit down with someone who does this all the time, then my concern is that we're not going to get you the right information on the way that would best suit your needs, your vision, hopefully that comes from the throne room of God instead of just simply from traditional ways of leaving finances. So what does that legacy look like? And what is in the best interest of those that you are trying to pass money on to? Again, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $50 million, everyone needs a strong estate plan.
Okay, we will discuss this more after a break here. People are intrigued, though, Paul. They want to find out how to get in touch with you, how to find out more about what you offer. How do they do that?
Well, head over to legacyandfaith.com. As a matter of fact, I was just talking about getting right proper information. We have workshops coming up that will help give you that initial information. You can sign up at our website. There's past podcasts. There's ways to communicate with us. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswordtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswordtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland this week on the Legacy and Faith Show, talking about financial integration with your estate plan. So important. Paul says it's just about the most important part of a plan, whether you're using a will or a trust. And it's kind of interesting how labeling assets really makes a difference, whether they're labeled in someone's individual name or in the trust name.
Or jointly.
And that kind of leads us to the question of, well, I'm just going to leave everything to my spouse. So why do I need a plan at all?
Right. Good.
Because she's like, we co-own everything anyway.
Yeah. Great question. So there are multiple considerations when we're married. And it may or may not be that you have children down the line. So let me fire off a couple of them for just why we would need to sit down with a couple and make sure that we have really strong planning. And then after we have good planning, making sure that the assets integrate into that plan properly. So if I own things jointly with my wife and I pass away, then because my wife owns that account with me jointly, it's automatically hers. So she wins. Okay. Last man standing wins it all. So, so always sleep with one eye open. So that is the base premise of owning something jointly. Now, there's ways to actually title things jointly to where I could not give it to my spouse, but I would have a say over that. But I'm going to not go there in this point in this discussion. So the general thought process, the general rule is that if it's jointly titled with my spouse, they are going to take that asset because they're a joint owner. Now, so number one, we'll start on the high end, which is what if you have done very well financially? If I leave everything to my spouse, I may have blown the opportunity to properly plan for taxes. Hmm. So if anyone has more than $2 million. It's actually $2,193,000. If you have more than that, then you are going to be subject to a Washington State estate tax. And if you simply leave everything to your spouse, then you are giving them everything. When they pass away, they will be taxed. Your estate will be taxed. So we blew an opportunity to save taxes. I don't know about anyone else, but I do not want to be paying Washington State or the federal government taxes when I don't have to. Hmm. So I don't mind paying taxes, but I do mind paying unnecessary taxes. And an estate tax is almost always unnecessary. So number one, if you have done well, leaving it to your spouse could be the worst thing because you may just be writing Washington or the federal government a large check, and I don't like it. Hmm. So that's number one. Number two is that what if we're on the complete opposite spectrum, which is we don't have very much. Well, as we age, we may not be able to afford or qualify for long-term care options. So if we don't have a lot of financial resources to protect our long-term health interests, then we may need a plan that actually protects the spouse should we pass away. And so there are ways that we can actually protect each other when finances are not in abundance, but make sure that the finances we do have are protected against, again, Washington State possibly just simply taking them. So there are rightful, righteous ways to make sure that we can protect each other, whether it's because we have a lot, or whether it's because we have a little, or sometimes we're right in between and we just need to know if there is a safeguard that we can arise. Now, here's the last thing about just simply giving everything to a spouse. And so we're talking about joint assets or using or having assets integrate into the plan properly, which is so what if one spouse passes away and then 5 years down the road, they go, ooh, look at that person. Now, I've used these statistics before, which is, Mark, how fast do you think a man, after being married and losing his wife, how long statistically do you think it takes for a man to get remarried? Now, everyone in the audience, you come up with your own number. And in my experience, I'll tell you what the answer clients give versus statistically what it is. So, Mark, we'll let you go because you have a voice on the show.
Probably a couple years.
Couple years. Okay. So most people, specifically when I ask this to couples, the wife is going, oh, in a year or less. So yes, the answer is right at 2 years. Hmm. Okay. So now.
For men.
Now, women, you do have a statistic as well. When I ask this to couples, the wife always says, what answer, ladies out there? Never. I will never get remarried again because I do not want to train someone else. I barely got this one trained.
Right.
All right. So actually, you have a statistic and it's about 7 years. Mm. So remarriage is a real issue, which means that if I die and my wife was to get remarried and everything was just simply left to her, now Bo the tennis pro is coming in and he may want to swindle my wife. And if it's a, let's say it's not Bo the tennis. Well, what if this is the greatest guy on the face of the earth and my wife marries this person, a great husband, but now my portion, I would have wanted to go to my daughters, not to support this other person. So, so do we have a legacy vision in mind? Is what has God told me to do with building my legacy? And so, so I can tell you multiple stories of a second spouse taking everything and the original children get nothing. Hmm. I'm in the middle of one right now.
Uh-huh.
I am in the middle of a lawsuit with that exact thing right now. And so this happens repetitively. So the dangers are that you have too much finances, and so you have a tax burden that we pay unnecessarily. You don't have quite as much as what you hope for, so you feel financially insecure. How do I protect my spouse? And then what if, even though emotionally it may not feel like you would get remarried, what if we got remarried and it destroyed the family plan that somebody would like to make sure happens? So if we just simply title stuff, simply give it to a spouse, we may not hit the legacy that we're really trying to create for our family and to protect the ones that we love.
Do these things still apply if the people then just live together? There's so many seniors now after their primary spouse for most of their life passes away. And now I see a lot of seniors, they just move in because for this very reason, they don't want to complicate those issues. Is there problems there?
Oh, there's huge problems.
Okay.
So
that doesn't solve anything.
That does not solve a thing. The ring on the finger has become a less important factor than the relationship itself. So there is language in Washington State for community property that says you are in a marriage-like relationship.
Really? Okay.
And if you are in a marriage-like relationship, community property rights may attach.
Mm.
And so therefore, someone passes away and so whose house are you living in? So the wife owns the house and or the female owns the house, and now the male moves in, and now that female passes away. Well, if there's no estate plan, if there's nothing to do, what happens in that marriage-like relationship? Is the guy just booted out? Is the woman just booted out because the not married but married but living like you're married? So there are huge issues in living together relationships. But I agree with you. That has become a more common thing in society. And it is a, again, it all goes back to planning right. How do we plan? Then after we have a good plan, how do we mm-hmm. integrate the finances to make sure the plan works? Mm-hmm. Whether we're married, whether we're not married, whether we have kids, whether we don't have kids, it doesn't matter. There is something that we are supposed to do in creating a legacy. And again, it doesn't matter whether you have a little or a lot. What is the heartbeat of God telling you to create? That is always step one. And then create the plan, make sure that everything is integrated into the plan so that it works when we need it. So that's really the heartbeat of what financial integration is trying to accomplish. The plan itself does not just magically take over, because there are legal issues on how you own your property that may override the plan. So a beneficiary designation skips the will. And so, therefore, the will could be done properly, but if the asset is not integrated, it may just bypass the plan in totality. And so, getting everything aligned with the plan is absolutely one of the most critical parts. As a matter of fact, I would say the most critical part after you develop a strong plan. So they must work collectively together. They must have a strong handshake. Otherwise, the plan will not succeed. And in our system, that's why we say most plans fail, is because the plan does not shake a proper hand. It does not see the assets properly. Therefore, the assets are doing something on their own, and they have their own rules, and it misses the plan altogether.
Interesting discussion this week, funding integration, making sure everything is in its proper place. It can be done, but it does take a plan, an estate plan, and that is what Paul Grant specializes in. He is an estate planning and tax attorney, and if you are intrigued by his information, you might want to find out more. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's upcoming workshops so that we can get the education, past podcasts, ways to communicate with us. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, next week we'll continue this discussion looking at how do IRAs work in funding integration. That'll be an interesting discussion. Always great stuff. The Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.